Welcome to Raising Deaf Kids. So we talk about language skills a lot on this podcast, but how much are you considering how you talk to your child and what you are actually saying to your child? Lacey Wood of Alabama Hands and Voices is on the podcast today to teach us all about how to talk to your child in a way that supports them socially and emotionally. In this episode, Lacey gives parents some really great strategies for how to talk to your kids. And also tips and little nuggets of information of ways that we as parents can become more self-aware of what language and stories we're bringing into our parenting from our own childhood. This is a really great episode, and it's filled with so many great nuggets of information, all laced with grace and compassion for parents who are trying their hardest each day. So, without further ado, please welcome Lacey Wood to the podcast. Hey, Mama. Welcome to Raising Deaf Kids. Do you want more ease in your daily life? Do you want to help your child learn language faster, but have no idea where to start? Do you find yourself searching for how to learn sign language and best ways to practice speech goals? Hey, I'm Elaine. I'm a mom of three littles, two of whom are deaf. I remember when I received the hearing loss diagnosis for our child, there were so many decisions and information overload. I lacked clarity and confidence and yearned for ease and balance in our lives. It was then that I discovered strategies to support our kids' language development at home, and I even helped them learn language faster. I can't wait to share it all with you. So put down that to-do list, close out that ASL app for now, and let's get started. So, you've been working on language with your child, but it feels like a struggle, and it seems like you have no time in the day to even practice language skills at all. Well, here's the good news. You don't need to struggle anymore. I want to invite you to my free one-hour workshop called Take Control of Your Time Challenge. And during our hour together, I will teach you how to become time rich, how to identify the time suckers in your day, and how to maximize the hours that you do have to get more done in less time. After the workshop, you'll walk away with a clear view of the time windows that you have in your day to practice language with your child in a way that feels like a natural part of your daily routine. So if this sounds like something that you need in 2024, you need to take back control of your time, then I am here for you. Go save your seat for this one-day live event at elainejacobs.myflowdesk.com/time-challenge. And I cannot wait to see you in the workshop. Hey, Lacey, welcome back to Raising Deaf Kids. And I am really excited to have you back for a second time on the podcast. Yay. And this
Yay,
time, I think is,
indeed.
I know last time was really fun. This time I think is going to be even more fun. So I know last time we talked a lot about like language modalities and language skills and stuff, which is totally up our parents' alleys. But this time we're going to talk about supporting our kids socially and emotionally, which I know that you said is kind of like your thing that you really love to talk about. So I would love for you to just like reintroduce yourself a little bit and then talk a little bit about kind of what you do with little people, big feelings, and what that is.
Yes, well, thank you, Elaine, for having me back. The last time I was here, we were talking about communication modalities and language opportunities and how challenging it can be for parents to make those choices, to shift gears when they have to. And I gotta tell you, that intentionality, that continual process of learning that is required for in that investment, daily investment in building our deaf and hard of hearing children's language, it's pretty similar to what we have to invest intentionally into with social emotional development for deaf and hard of hearing children. So I just a quick overview. I'm a teacher of the deaf. I graduated from Gallaudet University, ooh, 20 years ago. And have taught deaf and hard of hearing preschoolers in an ASL English environment. I have provided early intervention to families with deaf and hard of hearing children and supporting parents in their choice and their desired outcomes for their children. That is what I hold above all else, is that your child, your family, your decision, what is right and best for you. And I believe the professional's job is to come in and resource and support and connect you to the right people to help you reach that desired outcome for your child. Social emotional development is a huge passion of mine because I think it's only now coming onto our radar as important. There's been a lot of work in emotional intelligence, or what we might call soft skills. And we used to think, oh, intelligence was where it's at. If you're great in your field, if you're really smart, you go places. But I think we're broadening the scope of our understanding of what makes a healthy adult human being, and honestly, a healthy child, and by the way, a healthy adolescent. And what research is showing is that mental, social, emotional, relational piece, that emotional quotient, is a far greater prediction of life success and satisfaction. How we interact with others, how we regulate our own emotions, how we make choices based on our emotional processes and perceptions of self and others in the world, it's a really big deal. And as I reflect on my teaching experiences and early intervention experiences, and then my marriage experiences, my husband is profoundly deaf. Grew up with acute speech, learned American Sign Language socially in school and starting around middle school, and is now American Sign Language. That's his primary mode of communication. He does use some spoken language and lip reading when he's out and about. But our family is ASL English, bilingualism out of necessity. And that's a great thing. When I say necessity, I don't mean that in a, well, we just had to. No, I mean it in a, how cool is that? That we happen to be uniquely positioned to have this opportunity and to give it to our children and to engage with members of the deaf community on a regular basis through church, through events, through friends coming over to the house. It's when I became a parent and was faced with the complexity of not just navigating and regulating my own emotions, but their emotions, my children's emotions, and the emotions of my husband, and all that it stirred up, because we as parents are bringing our childhoods to that parenting gig, to our marriages, to our friendships. There is no way around it. But most of us are not aware of the messaging we received from our parents. And most of us have really well-intentioned parents who did the best they could with what they knew. And we're doing the same. So there's a whole lot of grace involved for self, for our families of origin, for our spouses or partners, for our children. Because most of us are stumbling through this whole social, emotional maturity path. I think it's hard for all of us, but I see how that's exacerbated when you have a child with any sort of sensory or additional learning need. It takes you down on a whole new trajectory. That is a landscape. You take what you already don't know that you don't know, and then there's so much to learn. And you have a new infant every 2 to 3 months. We know that developmentally. And we bring home a newborn baby, and they're basically a lump of need. But really quickly, they become social and relational beings. Of course, they were when they at birth, but we see that what I call a relational feedback loop starting to develop very early on. And we now know that those experiences in the earliest years of a child's life will shape the rest of their lives. So what we're giving children, and again, this is the same with language, what we pour in during these earliest years really matters. It's going to set the stage. And so that became apparent to me when I was teaching, when I was providing early intervention services, holding all those emotions and teaching appropriate ways for children to express them. But man, did it hit me square in the face with my own children who are hearing. But it shines a whole new perspective on the rubber meeting the road in shaping human beings. While I'm continuing to be shaped, and my husband is continuing to be shaped, and so there are individuals being shaped, but then you can't ignore the relational piece. We're constantly bumping into one another, ricocheting off of one another. I mean, how often do you get up in the morning? My girls are 12 and 15 now. So, one didn't sleep so great. So she's really quiet and introverted, and she comes into the kitchen. She's focused on her tasks to get out the door. Well, the other one comes bopping in, singing, and you hear one child say to her, "Could you please be quiet?" And what was moments before, a happy 12-year-old says, "Why are you yelling at me?" And then daddy hears through hearing aids an increase in volume, and he looks and he's like, "Girls, what's happening?" And then one tells her saga, the other tells herself, "I'm bleary-eyed. Can we all just be quiet?"
How everybody's like in the morning, different emotions in the morning, and
Yes.
then you start to kind of build is what it kind of sounds like. I mean, I recognize this in my own house, but I
Exactly.
think most parents do, where it's just like everyone starts reacting to each
There you
other,
go.
and the
Yes.
like, it just the emotions build.
Yes.
Keep building
Yes.
up, whereas I think what we're talking about is we need to find ways to settle them down.
Exactly. Because
Is where I'm
once
guessing you're
that's
going.
You're exactly right. And it's a lifelong process. But the earlier we start it, like with language development, like with all aspects of development, the better, the healthier we get in the long run. I think what I've had to learn is relationships are complicated. I think we all know that. Emotions are complicated. Social experiences are complicated. Emotional reactions and reflections on social experiences are complicated. So the more we know, the better. But amidst that complexity, and this has been so freeing to me to know that in relationships, ruptures are inevitable. Banging up against each other, having mornings in the kitchen moments. But the growth happens in the reflection and the repair. We can always go back. And one of the healthiest things we can model for our children is to go back and repair. I am sorry. I misread the situation. I thought you were snapping at her. So then I snapped at you. And I see how I contributed to that. Of course, in this situation, I'm talking teens who have robust language. But when we talk about our younger ones, there are still ways to repair ruptures. And that is a really integral part of relational growth and health and emotional health.
Yeah. And our little ones, which is probably why your website's name, Little People, Big Feelings, have really big
Yes.
feelings,
Oh,
but
yeah.
they don't have all of the language like a teenager does for you to sit down and like verbally talk them through it, even with like my 3-year-old is typical hearing, and she speaks actually really, really well for her age, really advanced. But even so, she's 3. And there's like an
Oh boy.
emotional maturity that obviously kids, when you're talking about that you work specifically for like birth through 5, that they just don't have yet,
They don't have it.
because they're not older and they're not supposed to at their age. And so then it's like, you've got tantrums, but then you've got to kind of sort through and figure out like, well, what's the root cause of this? Because usually with kids, at
Yes.
least what I've experienced with my own kids, is like what they're upset about isn't actually the thing.
It's the thing under
There's
the
something
thing.
out. This the thing that they're like got upset about or saying they're upset about. There's something else a little deeper. And I think you can start talking your kids through that very early on. I do with my 3-year-old, for example. I have been giving her language as far as like emotions, like she'll be crying over something. Like I tried to help her put on her clothes and she didn't want me to help her,
Of course she
which is,
didn't. She's three. What were you
yes,
thinking?
she's very independent,
Yeah.
and so she like falls on the floor and starts crying. So I sit there and I say, why are you crying? And then she'll say, because I'm crying,
Right.
or I don't know. And then I'll say, are you mad? Are you frustrated because of this? Are you mad because of this? Are you sad because of this? And she usually, when I say it, understands like what mad, frustrated, and sad are, but it's just me like trying to figure out, okay, like what is the cause, and then being able to work her through that. So I
Yes,
don't have
absolutely.
teenagers yet. I worked with teenagers, and with them, I know the emotions are like a little bit different, a little bit more, situations are a little heavier, but
Yes, and they're very,
you
you
can
know, by
talk.
nature self-centered. So you're re
Yeah.
teenagers essentially you're reliving aspects of toddlerhood in that I'm the center of the universe and my perspective and my experience
Yeah.
are the only things that matter. And processing through those to move to next level. It's that balance of receiving our kids where they are at, validating them no matter what age they are, because isn't that what we as adults like and need in order to calm down? You got to name it to tame it. And that's a Dan Siegel quote. And boy, is that important. And that's what you're offering your child, but this is life.
But it sounds like to me, what we're saying is, and I am going to agree with this, the first step in supporting our kids socially, emotionally is to support ourselves
Oh,
socially
my
and emotionally.
goodness.
Because I mean, I agree. When I had kids, it was a whole different way of like relating to my husband. Yeah, it was a whole different way. Like you said, it all of a sudden brings up all of the emotions and the ways that you were raised, and some of the ways that you might like, some ways you might like the way your parents raised you and you might want to continue it. And then there's other ways that you didn't really like and you didn't really think about it as a kid, but now that you're an adult, you're like, I don't know if I want to do that now with my own kid. Like you're kind of like you're kind of reliving your own childhood
You
and kind of
are, yes.
rethinking your own childhood from a different lens and deciding what you want to bring forward from that and what you don't want to bring forward. Has that's at least been my process with having my kids.
Yes, and that takes reflection.
Yeah.
There's a concept out there called reflective parenting. And what we have to do as the adults in the room is reflect on how am I perceiving this behavior in my child, in my spouse, in that neighbor across the street, in that person in the grocery store who blocked me with their cart? We have to become aware of our own inner processings and emotional reactions to those things that happen around us each day, we have to become aware. It does help to name, what messages did I receive growing up? Did I hear? My husband heard a lot of boys don't cry and don't be a crybaby. So he learned very quickly in order to survive in his family, tears were not welcome. Sadness was not welcome. My grandfather, I remember growing up, every time one of us would cry, he would say, "Oh, stop, your kidneys are too close to your eyes." Spoken like a true Navy pilot. We may hear messages, get over it, or, oh my goodness, it wasn't that big a deal. So your ice cream fell on the pavement. You know, there's more ice cream to be had in the world. Move on. Put on your big girl panties. You know, there are messages we received, and sometimes those messages are unspoken. They may have been, every time I became emotionally intense, my parent would leave the room, for example. So naming and really exploring and reflecting on, what are the messages I really ingested? And what was the impact of that messaging on me? And from there, we can grow and heal ourselves and grow in what's called our own emotional literacy, our ability to read self and others like we do a book. And that is one of the areas that we've long overlooked for our deaf and hard of hearing children. Often they are missing environmental cues. Even those wearing hearing technologies who may be accessing sound, they're still missing pieces of the puzzle of what's happening around them. And so they need parents intentionally coaching them through. We need to become coaches. But coaches, when you think about it, I would not make a good football coach because I know absolutely nothing about football. Who's going to be a football coach? Yes. Amen. Who's going to make a good football coach? Somebody who's played for a very long time, who knows strategy, who knows the game, who knows how to communicate the game to his players. Somebody who has high football literacy. Same thing with emotions. Parents who actively build their own emotional literacy and awareness become improved coaches for their children. And deaf and hard of hearing children need that coaching process all day, every day. And that's a big deal to offer that to our children.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I would love to address, so I know that my parents are thinking, okay, I've got like the language side. Yes. So I need to like intentionally work with them on language. Now you're telling me that I need to intentionally work with them socially, emotionally. I only have so many hours in the day. Is there a way? I feel like these fit together.
They absolutely fit together, Elaine. And I'm so glad you mentioned it. They're inextricably intertwined. You absolutely cannot develop social emotional skills without the language piece, either visual language like American Sign Language, spoken language, or combination of both, if that's the path you are on with your child. But you also can't really develop more language without those daily conversations with your children. And a lot of those, when you think about it, center on the child's feelings and lived experiences and engagements with others in their world, whether at mom's morning out or childcare or school or things, or even parent-child There is simply no way to tease those apart.
So where we were kind of picking up to is our parents are really, really busy. If we tell them, okay, now you've got to like support your kids social emotionally, they're going to do it because our parents will do like anything for their kids. And so kind of, what I tried to do and help parents with is, how to intentionally work with their deaf and hard of hearing child with language skills, and then also, what you're saying, support them socially and emotionally as like a natural extension of their day. So we're
There
not
you
trying to
go.
add more to your plates, parents. We want to help you integrate this into your daily schedule that you're already doing with your kids. And the great
Yes.
part, as you were saying, is that language skills that you're already working on pair so nicely with also supporting your kids in a social and emotional way. So it really all goes
Exactly.
together.
It truly does. And I think you've pointed out, I call it the language of feelings. And you demonstrated that with what you're doing with your 3-year-old now. Just when you notice your child having big feelings, label those. Oh my, I see you are frustrated. And we're not just pointing out, by the way, the what I call challenging or hard to feel emotions. We're also doing that. Look how excited you are. You're looking out the window, waiting for Grammy to come. You feel so excited. I see you smiling. I see your fingers, scrunching around. That shows me you're excited. Teaching our children that we read them, we attune to our children, that tuning in is really critical. Paying attention to what they might be feeling. And as they get older, and that can start on the changing table with an itty bitty baby. Ooh, you don't like when mama takes off your diaper. It feels so cold. Yikes. You can label bodily sensations too, to build that awareness in. And that sends the message to the child, I, as your first caregiver and first teacher, am really paying attention to you, your signals. I'm labeling them, I'm honoring them, I'm here to support them. It sends the message that all of you is welcome, all of your feelings are welcome here. Of course, we know that not all behaviors are welcome. And that's a very important piece, especially where our deaf and hard of hearing children are concerned, because we do see parents falling into thinking of, oh, that child's life is hard enough without me telling them no to the lollipop in the checkout at Walmart.
Oh,
Or,
that's a good one. Lacey.
yeah, oh boy. And, or, well, she doesn't really have enough language yet or to understand that I meant no hitting. Or when she snatched that toy, I don't really know how to explain the concept of sharing. So I'm just going to let this one slide. Over-empathizing with our children does a disservice to them, but empathizing is really important. What we model and what we pour into them, when a child does what children do, has a big feeling, has a big response, pausing to have empathy first. Oh man, it is so disappointing when you can't have that lollipop. That is hard. We can have a lollipop another time. Right now, though, is not the time for that. Validating and empathizing and holding that alongside the limit. And as they get older, we can give them more why. We're going home to have dinner, and mama wants you to eat a healthy dinner. Or daddy saw that you were frustrated. I saw you felt frustrated. You wanted to turn with that toy, but it is brother's turn with that toy now. We can wait until brother is done, giving them a why, because that hurts him when you snatch the toy or hit him. One of the things we have to do with our deaf and hard of hearing kids is make the implicit explicit. They are not, we
Okay.
can't assume they're bringing the background knowledge to the table. We can't assume they have that language comprehension yet. We can't assume that they got all the information. We have to teach that starting at a very young age. So when we do such things as point as attuning to our children, noticing their signals, naming their emotions, we're essentially modeling how they should treat others too, what they need to pay attention to for young ones. And by the way, these skills, this is the good news. If you have an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 38-year-old who doesn't have these skills, they can still learn them. We can build these abilities. Again, it's lifespan work. So that's the good news. But it does take intention and it takes consistency, that continued working those conversations into daily life. If your child is unloading the dishwasher and they pick up the silverware basket, for an older child, and the silverware, we've all had that experience. The silverware basket opens en route to the counter to put the silverware in the drawer.
Yes.
And we all know, even at 45, my whole system goes through the roof when that happens, right? That's just a natural. And so giving our children an, oh man, whew, that was startling. Notice their reaction. See, attune to what's happening and give it a name. I am so sorry that happened to you. Here, let's pick it up together. Do you see how much language I just offered and how much of the social emotional piece I coached them through all at once?
Yeah, I love that. It's so easy to integrate them and so natural. And honestly, I love what you were saying, bringing up about holding our deaf and hard of hearing kids, to the same level that we hold our hearing kids to, which I've heard a lot from deaf adults just from hearing them, like when I went to the Hands and Voices conference, and I heard deaf
Yes.
and hard of hearing adults to speak. One of the takeaways that they really stressed was, hold your child, to the same expectations, like hold them to a high expectation level because they can do it. Deaf and hard of hearing doesn't
Yes.
mean, cognitively decline, unless it does. And that's like a whole other conversation, unless
Yeah,
that's
in our
part of
Deaf
the overall
Plus kids.
diagnosis. But, all of that aside, because I think a lot in, you guys can correct me or expound on this because you would probably know. I feel like a lot of the world kind of equates like deaf and hard of hearing as also having like a mental challenges or a cognitive challenge. And that's not
Absolutely.
true, but you're right. And as parents, if we are hearing ourselves and we don't understand what our kids are going through, there is almost like, even if we're aware, a natural tendency to still see it as a deficit. And still, like, give them a little more leeway. Like you said, oh, they don't like understand the language yet, or I don't understand how to like give them the language yet. And
There
so
you
we're gonna
go.
let this slide. And then you like keep letting the stuff slide when really they are extremely capable of learning this. And, honestly, to our kids, they don't see themselves as having a deficit. So that's where
There you
like
go.
the difference is, at least like if you're like my kids and they were born with it, this is the only way they've ever been.
It's their
They've
norm.
never heard anything except for their cochlears. Like they,
There you
and
go.
they are normal and this is a normal life for them. And so there's no problem with holding the boundary or holding them to the expectations that they need to be able to function in the world. Because ultimately we all want our kids to grow up and be functioning adults. This is how we do it.
Yes.
Is we have to hold them to those expectations that are appropriate for their age, with the understanding that, yeah, we've got to do a little bit more intentional work on,
Yes.
the language and the social, emotional, whereas a lot of our typical hearing kids, because some families like us have like both, will learn
Yes.
more through like incidental.
There
Although
you go.
I argue that with typical hearing kids, with the emotional piece and the social piece, you still have to be intentional because little
Absolutely.
kids don't know how to regulate. And just like you're
There
talking
you
about with
go.
teenagers and they're very light centered on themselves, so are little kids, you know, and they want what they want and they want everything to be comfortable in their life all the time, which, like, who doesn't? But that's not the reality
Yes,
of life.
exactly.
And so, you know, I would say, to me, it doesn't matter if your kids have hearing loss or not. You still need to be intentional as parents with, you know, growing their, like, emotional maturity, because kids don't naturally, like, understand that.
Yes, they don't. And we take for granted. We've too long assumed that they do. And then we wonder why we have teenagers and adults with limited self-regulation. They can't express themselves clearly in the workplace. They can't keep a job because they have angry outbursts. Or at the minute they feel threatened in any way, they just close off and shut down and never go back to that place or person. You know, everybody has a range of how we perceive the world and respond to it and shaping that. And that's that coaching our kids piece. Think of yourself as a coach. But again, coaches are bringing those skills to the table. I do really emphasize, and there's information about this on Little People, Big Feelings, the website, standing in your child's small shoes. That is such an important piece to see the world as they do. That is huge. But again, we hold that in balance with where do we need to go next? What are my long-term desired outcomes? There's a great expression, it's British, I believe, start as you mean to go on. If I over-identify with that child's challenging moment, if I let things slide now at 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, I'm establishing habits. I'm starting as I mean to go on, regardless of what I'm doing. So, what are some healthy ways we can start scaffolding our children toward lifelong emotional regulation and well-being? And by the way, that self-regulation piece is highly related to continued ability to acquire language and learn. A child who shows up to kindergarten who is shutting down and bursting into tears every time a teacher requires them to sit in a chair for any amount of time is a child who's not learning. A child who, on the other end of that continuum, is dysregulating to the point they're raging, screaming, throwing chairs every time a child has something that they want is a child who's not learning. Anytime, it's called a window of tolerance. We all have one, and it's different for each of us. We want to stretch our children's window of tolerance, and that is that space where they're at their best for connecting, for learning, for growing. When we do things like build in wait time for our little ones, even 30 seconds beyond what they did earlier today. And that might mean if we're waiting in a grocery store line, instead of handing them a device, this is another major problem. There are absolutely times for screens and devices, but what can we do as parents to take advantage of those natural opportunities in the grocery store line? Maybe we start looking for happy faces on magazine covers.
That's a good
Maybe we
idea.
start to sway back and forth with a young toddler and make a game of that. Now we're swaying fast. Now we're swaying slow. What did we just do? We taught opposites while waiting. Waiting is a life skill. Have you ever been to the DMV? Then you know waiting is a life skill. Thinking of opportunities with intention to build in self-regulation practice.
Yeah.
Thinking
I
of
used to sing with
opportunities. Yeah, go
mine.
ahead. Yes.
I used to
And
sing, I still kind of do with my 3-year-old. because she's still little. But with my
Yes.
boys, when they were like, literal, they were like sitting in the grocery cart and we were like in the long line, I used to like sing with them, do different songs, especially songs that had hand motions to keep them involved. I know everyone does not want to like sing out in the
Right,
store.
right.
By the time I was like very shy about that the first time I had like my first child,
Of
but then as I've had
course,
more
yes.
children, I now am not shy about anything in public at
I was going to
at this
say,
point.
inhibitions, forget it.
Yeah,
Forget it.
that's
All
what they
bets
do to
are
you. Yeah, but yeah, we used to sing like Twinkle Twinkle Star, Itsy Bitsy Spider, like things like that.
There you go. And you know what you're doing while you're teaching them to wait in healthy ways? You're also building audition skills. You're building auditory memory of songs. You're building language. Or if you're signing, you're building that visual attention to that allows that child who's learning American Sign Language, say a visual language, you're building their ability to watch and focus and have joint attention, which builds language. These are huge, huge life skills that we can build into all day, every day.
Yeah.
Another strategy is pointing out faces and feelings, the cues, the emotional cues and social cues of others, because there's a concept called theory of mind. It's my ability to know that you have a different perception, opinion, need, feeling than I have. And we need to, the research shows that our deaf and hard of hearing kids are by and large very delayed, years and years delayed in their theory of mind. So it's a real call to action. And one of the ways we can build theory of mind is using what are called mental state words, talking about those feelings in self and in others. You can even do, I wonder. You can do it with animals. I wonder what that dog is thinking about. If you're at the park and you notice a dog in alert mode and you notice a squirrel 10 feet away, point it out to your child using that animal. Animals are less complex for children to read, but that's an exercise of a theory of mind skill. I wonder what that dog is thinking. Give that child a minute to observe the environment and talk about that squirrel. Ooh, I see a squirrel. I think that dog wants to catch that squirrel. When you're using those mental state words, I wonder, I believe, I think, I suspect, let's think about that together. You're inviting the child to consider someone else's mind. Perspective, belief, intentions. That's another thing. Reading others and learning to read the room, that's a phrase I use with my children. Hey, read the room. Your sister
Yeah,
has sent every
that's
message.
definitely a skill.
Oh my goodness. Your sister has sent every message that she is not interested in engaging right now, that she needs some quiet. We're going to honor that. When we teach our deaf and hard of hearing children to read the intentions of others, they know how to behave because it's not appropriate to walk into the library and go tearing down the book aisles, shoving books off the shelf. It's not appropriate. You know, we have to know context. We have to know contextual expectations, how to fit in with what's expected, or we get into trouble and we're not learning
And it's also
language or
embarrassing,
anything. It's
right?
also
Because you're
just
teaching your
embarrassing.
kids how to function. Like, it will be embarrassing for them. It's embarrassing you when they're little for as
Right.
a parent, but
Yes.
it will be more embarrassing for them when they become middle schoolers, teenagers, and
Yeah.
adults, and they don't know how to socially interact with
Exactly.
the community. And you do have to learn that there are, whether or we like it or not, there are appropriate ways to act in public around people
Absolutely.
and not appropriate ways. And, certain things, like you said, you have to wait in line. You can't just skip everybody and go to the front. There are certain ways that we have to learn how to act when we're out and around people. And that is how we start teaching our kids to do that. And if they don't
Yes.
know how to do that, it will actually be very embarrassing to them
It
as
will.
an adult and an older child, which, I is more concerning, I think.
Which is absolutely so. Start as you mean to go on. What is your vision for your child? Not just right now, but 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Because we all know that in a social environment, if a child is going around snatching toys, hitting, pushing, or on the other extreme, enters a social situation and shuts down and hides in the corner, none of those behaviors are conducive to friendships, to healthy relationships. And what do we know? Relationships make or break our world. I'll disclose this. My husband is a more reserved individual just by nature, by personality. And he has memories of extraordinary loneliness because his introversion essentially played into his profound deafness. And those two characteristics combined to send the message to him to default to, I won't initiate relationships. I won't try. It's not going to work for me anyway. Was he consciously thinking this? Absolutely not. But as an adult, through the adult lens, he can look back and think, I never really had the skills or abilities to make and keep friends. No one taught me that. They assumed, was it bad parenting? No. What parents don't know, they can't give to their children. But here's the deal, too, Elaine. If you're an adult, say a teacher, for example, and you have children who are acting out in very belligerent, inappropriate ways to get their needs met, physically, socially, emotionally, attention-wise, and you have children who withdraw and are silent and by and large and just go with the flow constantly, do whatever they're told, which child are you going to invest more attention in? It's the one who's acting out. That gets your attention. It's the squeaky wheel. And so we have to be aware of our children who default to making themselves small, to pleasing all the time, because guess what? Pleasing adults all the time puts you in harm's way with adults or other children who do not have good intentions toward you.
That's a
So
good point.
finding that middle space of assertiveness, not being aggressive, which is the far side of one continuum, and not being too passive and eager to please, teaching our children, giving them the language of feelings, giving them mental state words, giving them the ability to read a room and read others and come to conclusions, or not conclusions, hypotheses, theories of mind about what others may be thinking or feeling based on body posturing, other nonverbal cues, facial expressions. That's huge. That empowers our children to stay in that window of tolerance, to stay in that place of being assertive and engaged with their world. It builds autonomy, it builds a sense of self. It had a tremendously detrimental impact on my husband over his lifespan, to realize, oh, my assumption became, again, this is the adult talking. He said, I'm realizing I learned early on to assume no one liked me, that I would not be included anyway. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy in so many ways when we don't give our children these skills, when we don't coach them and build these really important abilities into their lives from an early age. And on the other extreme, our kids who tend to be more aggressive, more reactive, more acting out, they, when people avoid them, obviously, they're also internalizing messages like, everybody hates me anyway, so why try? Or it doesn't really matter what I do. Nobody really wants to hang out with me anyway. That or they attract the wrong people.
Or I'm always in trouble anyway,
There you
so it
go.
doesn't really matter what I do. I feel like I heard that a lot from like my high schoolers when I taught high school, who
Absolutely.
would like, kept acting out in class, getting in trouble. It's like, they're like, I'm in trouble no matter what I do, so it doesn't really matter how I
Right.
act.
Yes, because probably those children have had neglect in their home again, and it doesn't even have to be like Child Protective Services level of neglect. In most cases, it's that under the radar, mom and dad just don't attune to me, or they assume the worst of me. I have, and it's an infant mental health, infant and early childhood mental health premise to always be looking at the relational dyad and paying attention to what is the parent's view of their child. Because I've even heard parents, with, say, an 18-month-old who becomes upset and wants to, they leave that window of tolerance and they respond by screaming and by clenching. And if whoever's nearby gets clenched. And I've actually heard a parent in one particular situation say, "She's so mean. She wants to hurt other people when she doesn't get what she wants. She's mean." Well, good grief. And this is not a judgment on that parent. That probably is the messaging she received as that more intense personality who, instead of just falling to the floor, which is that more upset but passive response, going internally, falling on the floor, self-isolating, that other extreme that becomes aggressive physically or, vocally aggressive. Probably that mother heard, "Oh, you're being mean," from her own parents. So she's projecting that onto her child. So one of the work to do in that situation is to, let's get curious about that. Let's get curious about why you're viewing this child as mean. Let's work through that. Let's, again, that word awareness, let's bring that to awareness in the parent. And I think that's a crucial early interventionist role, preschool teacher role to, we're not just teaching children as professionals, we're teaching parents. We're helping to make parents aware of the language they're using, the amount of language, the quality of the language, opportunities to educate them to build theory of mind, to enhance social emotional development in their child. Again, most of us are not aware of what we're even bringing to the table. That mother was no more aware of her perception of her 18-month-old being, quote, mean, than a dog is aware of the fact that they bark every time the mailman comes up to the mailbox. It was as natural as breathing. It's like asking a fish, what is it like to be wet? The fish doesn't know. That's the fish's normal. But so that co-reflection, that sharing, and helping parents to understand their own perceptions and helping guiding them through empathizing with the child is a big deal. It also, as I was talking just now, another concept came to mind that is really, really important, and now it has left my brain. I'll circle back.
That happens to me all the time, literally.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, it sounds like really one of the first steps is self-awareness, like awareness
Yes.
of yourself, just to encourage parents a little bit, because we're not trying to concern you, but we are trying to help
Right.
you become aware of yourself and how you're
Yes.
interacting with your kids. And we're trying to get you to do it now versus later,
Absolutely. Yes, and
because
build it
now
in.
is, and it is a lifelong, like, you said,
Oh my
Lacey, it
goodness.
is a lifelong process. I am still learning it too. We all probably, like, for the rest of our lives are always learning, because also they like
Absolutely.
different things happen in the world, different things come up. I mean,
Yes.
that you are continuously learning how to regulate that like yourself. So, it's not something that you're necessarily going to get overnight. It is something that you evolve and your kids are going to evolve, but setting those foundations and becoming really aware of yourself first and how you're interacting and what you're bringing in is really a key part of being able to help your child.
Absolutely. And that brought up what I wanted to say before. Yes, great segue. I heard Dr. Kristen Neff, she's a self-compassion researcher. And I am grateful for the teaching of self-compassion because I think most of us default to being pretty hard on ourselves. At the end of the day, in my early years of parenting, in every year of parenting, last night, often as I lay in bed and reflect on the day, or I'm tidying the last of the kitchen, or I'm letting the dog out to go potty and I'm reflecting, I find myself going, that was a really poor way to respond to her. Or, boy, I was so distracted. My husband just wanted to share the new flowers he potted, and I had to finish that email. Golly, so selfish. I'm hard on myself, and I think we can all relate to that to some extent. But Dr. Neff talks about how about 90% of our energy, it's very counterintuitive, but when our children are have left their window of tolerance, about 90% of our energy needs to be invested in ourselves, staying calm, being aware of rising emotion in ourselves. We have a biological connection with our own children. Think of it. It's a different experience when my own toddler is melting down in the grocery store than when somebody else's toddler is melting down in the grocery store.
Oh yeah, it
And
doesn't bother
my,
me at all if it's somebody else's
there you
toddler. I'm
go.
just like, well, that's what kids do.
Exactly. But so
Yeah, but
for
when it's
other
mine, yeah,
people,
it's a different story.
the story we tell ourselves is, oh, that's what kids do. We might even say, oh, that poor mother, I've been there. Oh, goodness. Then when our own child does the exact same thing, pay attention to your self-talk. Oh my gosh, my kid is out of control, which obviously means I'm a terrible parent. Make it stop. Oh my goodness, do I leave? Do I stay? Do I change aisles? Do I run for my life? Do I leave the cart here? But when am I going to come back and do my grocery shopping again? Darn it, I don't have any other time. We flood ourselves. And when we're flooded with emotion like that, we're out of our window of tolerance. We're not at our best. We're not going to respond from a clear front brain space where our good thinking and responding happen. So if my child is melting down and I concentrate on my breath, and I concentrate often, what I've learned to do is put my hands over my heart. It's, even in public, it doesn't look like, people aren't really going to notice, but it's a calming, it has a calming impact on my nervous system. And then self-talk, what would I tell that other mom? This is what children do. This is not a reflection on your parenting. We're going to get through this. You're both doing the best you can, me and the child. It has an impact. That self-talk has an impact. That self-compassion has an impact on our ability to stay in our window of tolerance, in that space of our best thinking. Now, the reality is, Elaine, none of us stay in our window of tolerance every time. So that's where that rupture and repair comes in. We can repair the times we mess up, the times we rupture the relationship, and that's where the growth actually occurs, is in the ability to repair the relationship. And that can be in friendships, work environments, marriages, partnerships, parent to child. It's a really critical skill. The next concept here is that really relates to this is one of co-regulation. Young children, and even many of our older children, if they didn't get this in childhood, in many adults, One of the most healing aspects of a counseling, a therapeutic relationship with a mental health professional, is that that individual is trained to co-regulate, to stick around in your hard, strong, shameful, miserably damaging emotional experiences. They stay, they're trained to stay steady, to validate first and foremost, to regulate and relate. Because so often parents are under the impression that, oh, she needs to self-soothe. He needs to figure it out. Oh, he's just angry because I said no to the lollipop. He'll get over himself. But it's not physiologically, it's not neurologically possible for children to self-regulate in those earliest years. In fact, it's not till around 5 or 6 that they become increasingly able to self-regulate. But guess what? That 5 to 6-year-old self-regulation ability is built through 5 to 6 years of the caregiver co-regulating with the child. And that might look like the child has experienced the lollipop disappointment, which is a big and very real deal to the young child. So that's where that empathy piece comes in. But empathy doesn't mean we give over, we don't give in. You know, we, again, because start as you mean to go on. Co-regulation might look like, buddy, that is so hard. I see you're disappointed. You wanted that lollipop so badly. And co-regulation might mean, depending on your child, rubbing that child's back in the grocery cart. It might mean rubbing their backs briefly and then saying, here, help mama scan this. Can you scan the mac and cheese? Oh, where's the little barcode? Oh, look, you found it. Just press it right here. Distracting and moving forward from that. We can't always distract them. It may look like sitting in the rocking chair at home. It may look like finding a lovey. It may, but stay present. Even the other night, I tell you, Wednesday night, my daughter forgot to that she had a homework assignment. My 12-year-old, almost 13, forgot she had a homework assignment, and something within her shifted at dinner. Okay? So mom and daddy are trying to talk with her about the highs and lows of her day, and she's sitting slumped in her chair, and a tear starts to trickle down her cheeks.
No.
And I look at my husband because she's not looking at us, and I sign, you know, what is the deal? We're just trying to talk about her day. What is happening here? So I said, Eliza, what's going on, honey? I was annoyed. Like, can we just talk about our day without you having this? Well, she couldn't tell us. So it took a little time. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to honor the pause. Well, a few minutes later, she says, I forgot I have to finish my English outline. And you're going to be mad at me because I didn't do it this afternoon. Well, yeah, Elaine, if I were carrying, let me stand in her shoes for a minute. If I were carrying the panic of, oh my goodness, I forgot to do this, and oh my goodness, mom and dad have told me a zillion
Which we've all
times,
done,
which
like
we've
as adults,
all
we've like, oh my
done.
goodness, I forgot that doctor appointment was like right now, or
Right.
you know,
That
I
is a
forgot I was supposed to
normal.
meet that person or I was supposed to call that person.
Yes.
We've probably all done that as adults.
Yes. And so I had to really become aware because my first thought is this is a pattern for her. Good grief. When is she going to get responsible? But then self-compassion says, we've all done that. When am I going to get responsible? If you want to get down to it. So I held empathy. I also noticed that annoyance still within myself. So, but I had to hold empathy. And I said, Oh man, that's a hard experience. So I validated with her, alongside, I validated that panic. And then I said, oh, now it makes sense why you kind of just shut down and withdrew at dinner. And she just nodded quietly. So I gave words to that and I gave her a why. I suspect that's why. And she was able then to reflect in herself. But because I coached her through it. Again, this sounds very self-aggrandizing, Elaine. So I'll just disclose that once she had the MacBook open and was on to her assignment, I was doing dishes in another room because I knew I'm going to lecture her. But the truth is, she already knew. She was already feeling the pain of the natural consequence of now it's 7:15 and I'm doing a homework assignment when what I really want to do is get a warm shower and go to bed. Now, our little ones, of course, need that extended presence, that extended co-regulation to calm first, to regulate and then relate. Relate again. You're safe here. Mama is not going to lose her mind on you. Daddy is not going to jack you out of the room and toss you in your crib because of your strong feelings. I'm going to sit with you. We're going to stay calm or become calm together. You're not going to stay calm. Let's get real. We're going to become calm together, and I'm going to model those skills for you. And then we're going to, in a developmentally appropriate way, once we're calm, we reflect on, what could we do next time? And boy, with our young children, pointing out things like, oh, brother's face was so sad when you snatched the sidewalk chalk. Did you see his face? And you can even model for that child or have brother come back over. Do intentional teaching. And the more visual you can be with a child with limited language, the better. We're going for meaning. We're not going for guilt or shame or how dare you or what were you thinking or look how you hurt his feelings. We're not going for that. We're going for, brother, come on over for a minute. When he snatched your sidewalk chalk and it broke. Show me your face again. And guess what? That's beneficial to the sibling too. Because you're teaching them, you're building their emotional literacy. And, next time, what can we do? Sign chalk, please. Sign my turn. Practice that. Once we know that human beings, young and old, it's just a rule of how the brain works. Once we're out of that window of tolerance, no good thinking, connecting, learning, or growing happens. You have to do that. The teaching parts come after when you're calm, which
That's
feeds
good.
back into why the co-regulation is so important. We got to get to the calm first, and then we
So in the middle of a
teach.
tantrum is not the time to,
No, the brain is offline. It's like asking
to
the
like try
child to
to
do
talk through it and
calculus.
stuff.
You absolutely can't because Dan Siegel, Dr. Dan Siegel has a hand model of the brain. If you Google that on YouTube, he does this video and explains exactly what happens in our brains once we're triggered. And again, that trigger, what triggers you is going to be different from what triggers me. And certainly, a 2-year-old is going to be triggered by very different things, which is a reminder of our call to empathy. Stand in those little shoes. How are they perceiving the world? But yes, once that trigger is let off, the prefrontal cortex is part of your brain in front that is responsible for higher level thinking, problem solving, emotional regulation skills, it goes offline. It's the same thing as unplugging your computer from your router and expecting to access the internet. You can't do it. It doesn't work. So it's a similar concept. So what do? You get the brain back online by calming it. That's the first thing you do. But sometimes your brain, as the parent, is so offline that you got to calm yourself. And that is actually our priority because you're going to just throw kerosene onto the child's flame when you don't. And again, Elaine, this is a process for us all. I have flung spatulas and not at people that I can recall. Their recollection of flying spatulas may be different, but true confessions, we all have our flying spatula moment or worse.
That's
We're not
true.
flying spatulas, but my husband tends to dysregulate by doing what he did as a child, withdrawing, which kind of sends the message that, oh, we did something to daddy that made him so angry and disappointed with us that he left the room. Which, again, repair. Know thyself, that awareness. How do I typically respond? What do I need to do to keep myself online, to calm myself, and to offer that calm to my child?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's a process. So grace, grace, and a little more grace to ourselves, to our children, and paying attention to our internal narratives, the stories we're telling ourselves about our children's motives. Probably our 18-month-old is not mean. Probably our 18-month-old has no other way to convey grave and everlasting disappointment or fear or fury than to clamp nails into the nearest human being's skin.
And that even goes for like if our toddlers or preschoolers are biting, because I've had three biters. And not like they have never bitten other children, thank goodness, but they will get into arguments. I mean, my 8-year-old, not so much anymore, but my 5-year-old and my 3-year-old still a little bit. They're getting out of that phase. But when they would get mad, they, at one of their siblings, they would bite them. And they've gotten some pretty bad bites. And it is because they're mad at the time and they don't know how else to handle that feeling.
They're
And
not
that's like the
mean.
first thing they do. Obviously, that's not okay and we handled it, but that it's they're not trying to be mean
They're not
at the
thinking,
time.
I really want to
They're
hurt
not
you.
thinking, yeah, they're not
That's
thinking,
they're not thinking at
and they
all.
don't know what to do with the emotion. Well, that's so true because if you've ever, I mean, even tried to calm down like another adult, just like never mind yourself, but calm down like another adult who's mad and you're trying to like talk rationally to them and they are not receiving it. It's the same thing in adults. I mean, when we're in that like heightened emotional state, you're right. We can't receive like the logical,
Because that part of our
rational side,
brain,
and we have to like get through that first and then like talk after.
because that part of our
When
brain
you're
is
like,
offline. That's it's Dan Siegel uses it goes offline. You flip your lid is what he calls it in that hand model of the brain. You're trying to get water from a rock. It's a neurological fact. So
Which
knowing
is really
that,
great, for parents to know because when you do know that, now you can approach everything differently with more of a strategy.
For only focusing on what do we need to do to calm. And by the way, handing them that lollipop is when you've already said no is not, I mean, it's an immediate way to calm, but start as you mean to go on. So how do I calm without handing over the lollipop, without excusing the biting, without how do I do that? And then follow up with direct teaching. Our deaf and hard of hearing kids are missing a lot, if not most, incidental learning. So teach them, show faces, even when we're reading books. Books are great teachers in terms of even for a child with limited language, looking at pictures of the faces or posturing of animals in books, characters in books, TV shows, you can use that. You can pause. Oh man, look at his face. He feels so sad. I wonder why. You're modeling mental state words, and you're coaching that child to read the room, to read body signaling, and to look at the bigger picture, to notice.
I love that. This has been such a fun conversation. So what if fun for me, because I think all this is really interesting, but also
It
very
is.
informative for parents because this is a big deal. I feel like kind of our generation of people who are parents are trying to do things a little bit differently from our
Yes.
parents, and that's not a dig at our parents. Our parents did not have like podcasts. Parenting
Exactly.
podcast, they, didn't, I mean, they had parenting books, it was limited. They just didn't have the information that we have now. So, when you do better, you have better information, you can do better when
Yes.
you know better. And, so I feel like that is something that our generation is trying to do. And especially with the like social emotional support, we're kind of noticing that our parents maybe like didn't do as well with that. And so we're trying to do
Sure.
better. So I see that a lot in like the parents that I'm around who are like my age and
Yes.
have, younger kids are trying to do it a little bit differently, which is
Yes.
great. Which is why like these conversations are so great to kind of help coach parents through that. But what does a parent do if they're like, I want to learn how to do this better, but I just kind of like, I need someone to kind of come along and help me.
Absolutely. Well, my website has quite a bit of information, but the truth is, we are relational beings. We learn better in what are called corrective relational experiences. That's what a therapist provides. That's what even an early intervention professional or a teacher who is skilled in this area, who has knowledge of this, can really provide, because we learn better alongside someone. Self-help is pretty much a misnomer, if not a straight myth. We heal and grow in relationship with others. So finding support through mental health support is always, I always highly recommend that. Finding friends or a community, and that can even be online, of people who know this information is really, really helpful. One of the things I am hoping to offer at some point soon is adding to more information to my website, but also figuring out a way to provide coaching services at little to no cost to parents. So I'm navigating that right now. I would love, though, I love an opportunity to speak to parent groups of deaf and hard of hearing children to just help them at least gain that awareness of what they're going toward. Because we also know that there's a ton of information out there. We are in information overload, but that's why I
True.
emphasize that relational experience. I can read something 1,000,000,000 zillion times, but it's not necessarily going to impact my life personally until I practice it. And that coaching piece is a huge part of practicing. Most of our growth is going to come in that personal engagement and walking through and trying it again, rinse and repeat.
Yeah, there's definitely a thing of being like stuck in like education, but not
Yes.
putting into practice that like it's called something, which I can't remember right now, but where you just like are gain information and you just like educate, 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 but you don't put into
Yeah,
practice like what
it's
you're
called
doing when you're teaching.
reality.
That's not gonna work. Yeah.
It's just called what we do as humans. Yeah, and I think any of us can scroll Instagram and have all these epiphanies, and then our child starts clamoring for something, and our first response is knock it off. And then we go, oh no,
I
I
just
did
did
it
it.
again. Oh, I'll never grow. I'll never do this better. Yeah, and some parents simply are surviving, or they're in grief, or they are putting food on the table and they just don't have the capacity. Maybe they're a single parent, or they have absolutely no support system. And that's a hard, and I think as professionals, we have a massive responsibility to see those red flags and come alongside and know how to support parents in those areas too. It's a huge piece that has long been missing from the support we offer families of deaf and hard of hearing children. So I'm hoping to continue to pave a path forward that improves and enhances this area, this critical area of need for our children and families.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep us informed
Yes,
on
I
what you do,
will.
and if as you develop your coaching, because I think that's so needed, it's such a fantastic idea. So as you get
Yes.
that moving and growing, let us know,
Yes,
and we'll let
will
our parents
do.
know about it for
Yes.
sure.
Thank you. And if you
Is
want to reach, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No,
If
I
you
was gonna
want to
say, if
reach,
there's anything that you want else you want to add or anywhere that they can reach out to you, let
Yes.
them know.
So I have an email account through Little People Big Feelings. Of course, I have the website, littlepeoplebigfeelings.com. I am peripherally on Instagram. I need to build my skills. It intimidates me, but I'm trying. That's the handle for that is Little People Big Feelings, DHH. And then you can reach me via email at littlepeoplebigfeelingsdhh@gmail.com. If you go to the website, next month in April, I am starting a month or a seasonal newsletter, a quarterly newsletter, with some of these tips and tricks specifically designed for our deaf and hard of hearing children and families. And so if you go to the website, you can enter your email address to receive those emails. I'm also going to be sharing them with state EDDIE coordinators and early interventionists to get the word out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. We'll put all that in the show notes for our parents too. Thank you so much
Thank
for taking your
you.
time to come talk to us again. I really had fun and I really appreciate it.
Yes, well, thank you, Elaine, for having me and for doing this work you're doing to really bring these important issues to the forefront, that awareness, so that parents can, we've all got to start somewhere, right? We are all allowed to be beginners because that's what life is all about. And we're all allowed to begin again and to begin again and begin again. We all have freedom and grace to do that. So thank you for having me.
Hey, Mama, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If so, would you take 30 seconds and subscribe to this podcast? I never want you to miss an episode and to be without valuable information to help you and your family. Also, please leave a quick written review for the show on Apple Podcasts. It lights me up to know this podcast is helping you. Now go check off the rest of your to-dos so you can love on your family today. And I'll meet you here every Tuesday and Thursday for podcast episodes to support your whole family in language learning. Ciao, Mama.